Welcome to Heart for the Community here on Soul Sister Wednesday on SoulSisterRadio.com. I would like to now welcome you to your host of Heart for the Community, Ms. Doreen Wong.
Thank you, Maria. Good morning, everyone. Happy April 25th, which also happens to be National Denim Day. As you remember, last week we talked about the impacts of violence that has on women and families. So I'm actually had a very interesting morning, but I'm wearing my jeans for Denim Day and my Heart for T-shirt and my Hearts of Hope necklace from our wonderful sponsor, Rebecca Lawler Limited. And today we have a wonderful show that's really very special to me. As some of the listeners may know, I had the honor and privilege of being the executive director of the Asian Youth Center in San Gabriel. And it was the most amazing experience that I've ever had. I've never met anyone more committed to serving at-risk youth. And, you know, the song that Maria played before the show started was from Nickelback, and it was called If Everyone Cared. And it's a interesting concept, because if we think about it, if everyone cared, maybe, you know, we wouldn't have as many youth who get involved in gangs. There would be more programs like the two that we're going to talk about today. So on the show, we have Mr. Edwin Henderson. He's the founder and president of On a Mission. Welcome, Edwin.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. And we have Tony Zepeda. Did I say that correctly?
Yes, you did.
Okay. And he's the director of operations at Soledad Enrichment Action. Is that correct?
Yes. Thank you very much. Humbled to be on your show.
Thank you, Tony. And the next guest, I have the wonderful experience of being able to hear him speak last week, and his speech just blew me away. It inspired me and actually helped form the topic of today's show, and that's Mr. Daniel Arroyo. How are you, Daniel?
I am doing fine. How are you?
I am well, thank you. So let's introduce you guys to our listeners. Daniel, why don't you go first and tell us your story?
Okay. Well, first of all, good morning, everyone. I'm honored to be speaking to you all today.
Good morning.
My life before Soledad and Richard Acton was like a horrifying nightmare, to say the least. My mother was deported when I was just 8 years old, and I never had anyone in my life I can call a dad. I lived most of my childhood life being raised by my sister. My sister did her best at giving me the love my mother once did, but she couldn't. She had 6 kids of her own and was too busy caring for my nephew. I felt like I had nothing to live for. I was lonely and angry at the world. I hated school. From my perspective, it was pointless. I didn't have anyone to impress with my grades or achievements I did at school. As the years passed, I got less and less guidance from anyone, so I turned to the only thing in life that I had that was a constant: gangs. Slowly, I became more and more deeply involved in my neighborhood gang. They made me feel like I had a family again. They showed me the love my mother once did and the protection I wish I had gotten from a father. They introduced me to drugs. I not only used them, but I got others to use them so I could have money in my pocket. I had to become another statistic of the gang culture. The things I saw while growing up corrupted the way I viewed life. I thought the only thing life had to offer was life in prison or death. Until one day I was arrested for possession of illegal drugs and paraphernalia. The moment I was arrested, I thought to myself, this is it, my life in prison. At 16, I was offered 6 months in camp, and I jumped at the offer. I saw it as a chance to try and change. Thought it would be easy to do 6 months in camp, but it wasn't. It was difficult for me to adjust to the camp lifestyle. I got into fights continuously because of my gang affiliation. Day in and day out, I would think of the family I once had. My favorite holidays were Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. It made me extremely sad to have to spend my favorite holidays with people I didn't know or cared to be around. Once again, I was lonely. As my days in camp were almost over, all I could think about was my family. I thought to myself, should I change or should I continue the same path and end up back in here? The question didn't leave my mind until the last day. I was walking out of the gate from camp, and my sister was right there with the biggest smile on her face. Tears began flowing down my face. I hugged her, and I told her I was sorry for all the things I've done. She accepted my apology and said, I have a surprise for you. She pointed towards her car, and my mother was standing right there. I was in shock. Could this be true? I ran to her, and I hugged her for what seemed like hours. The tears just wouldn't stop running down my face. I had flashbacks of all the moments I had with my family, and more importantly, with my mother. I made my decision right then and there. I had my family back, and I wasn't going back to my old ways. The following week, I tried going back to my old high school, but they didn't want to accept me because of all of my problems in the past, plus I had insufficient credit. I didn't let it stop me. I was determined to get back into school. I had a long talk with the dean of my old high school, and he recommended me to go to SEIA at Manchester. He explained to me that it was a charter school, but I didn't care. I just wanted to be back in school. That same day, my mother and I went to SEIA. We noticed that the school was very small and there weren't many students. It was like no other school I had ever been at. I enrolled into SEIA Manchester, and on my first day, I saw different versions of my old self. I sat on my desk and foreshadowed of what would happen if I turned to my old self. My thoughts were interrupted. I looked up, and the student asked me what gang I was from. I looked at him right in the eyes, and I told him I wasn't from anywhere. From that moment, I knew I was a totally different person. I committed myself to every class, and I did every assignment I was put to do. I remember the first progress report I received at SEIA. I was astonished. I stood there for several minutes happy because I had all A's. I noticed that all my teachers really cared about my grades and how I was doing in school. They recommended I get involved with more school activities. So I did. People began to notice. They noticed me in Sacramento. They noticed me in the Youth Peace Movement program. And they noticed me in the Mass for College program. In Sacramento, I got the opportunity to speak to senators and assembly members in the Capitol. in the Youth Peace Movement program, I got to do community cleanups, graffiti removal, and head up meetings. In the Master College program, I learned how to apply to college and meet the requirements. In turn, I used that knowledge to teach others how to get into college. On December 13, 2011, my commitment, my hard work, and ethics all paid off. I was accepted to 3 4-year universities, Cal State Dominguez Hills, Humboldt State University, and Cal State Bakersfield University. And I was recently accepted to Cal State University Northridge. Although this is the end of my high school year, it's the beginning of my hard work and commitment in college. The struggles in the past created the person you're hearing today. I am much more than my story, and every day is a new page in my book of life. This accomplishment could have not been possible without the encouragement of my mother, Lucy Flores. I would also like to acknowledge two of my teachers who have become my mentors, Ms. Cooks and Mr. Daniels. They have inspired me to transform my life. I'm grateful for them. I'm also grateful for two of my best friends, Shadid Alexander and Abel Quesada. I'm lucky to have good friends that support me and are always there when I need them. Thank you very much.
That's great.
And, you know, every time I hear you speak, Daniel, like I get chills at, you know, what you went through and where you are now. And I think it's wonderful. And so, Tony, do you want to talk a little bit about SEIA and some of the programs and what you do there?
Absolutely. Thank you very much for this. And I think it's important to kind of go back to the roots of SEIA and where we came from, a basement in a church in East Los Angeles where a mother came in crying, angry, saddened, hurt about her child getting killed, wanting to see something different, that one person making that change. Fast forwarding 40 years to now, really, what have we accomplished? We have 17 educational centers throughout the county of Los Angeles. We provide gang intervention services for young people and their families through our schools, through schools in the area, in the community, even at General Hospital, USC Medical Center in East Los Angeles. We provide tutoring services, employment, gender-specific services throughout the county. And then we do this international youth peace movement, working hand-in-hand with peace laureates to bring about peace, the alternative to these gangs. We know that another important component that we do is reintegration programs, making sure that young people who are coming out of the system throughout the county really understand that this issue is not just about them, but about the family and how we work together with this family. In the county of L.A., there's an estimated 150,000 gangs. Roughly 39,000 are within the city of L.A. An average of about 1,300 gangs to deal with. We realize that our job is not to end gangs, but rather to work with our partners on the ground to provide concrete alternatives to those young people and those families that are ready for something tangible, sustainable in their life to really see a difference in their community. This is really about these young people and their families changing their lives and becoming productive citizens like Daniel has become. And to do the restorative justice, to give back, to drop the labels on these young people and treat them like young people and families, acknowledge them. I mean, some of the work that we've done with the gang reduction and youth development from the mayor's office, since 2009 to 2011, LAPD reports that in Boyle Heights, which is one of the grid zones that we have, we helped reduce crime by 31.5%. In Florence Graham, the area that Daniel grew up in, we helped reduce crime by 4.1%. In Newton, the bottoms of South Central, we helped reduce crime by 53.4%. And in Ramona Gardens, the place where LAPD wasn't accepted, now we've helped to bridge and be a part of that new way of doing work there and reduce crime by 31.5%. I mean, it's about really concretizing and making sure that things are being done and they're led by these communities and can be sustained.
Wow.
Right.
Doreen, let me interrupt real quick. This is Maria. Somebody has their computer volume on their computer up, who's on the phone. So if you do have your computer volume up and you are on the radio show, please turn it down because we're getting an echo. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And it was amazing to hear the stories about the Stay at Moms and how they got started, that it was a group of moms who cared about not only the well-being of their kids, but the community. And, having them patrol the streets and stand between gang members to try to bring peace was amazing to hear. I was so fortunate to actually be able to go to your game last week because I learned so much about Saya and the good work that you guys are doing. And then to hear statistics today is unbelievable.
That's great.
Well, and you know, part of the issue with the mothers here was that these mothers went straight to the core of the issue, which is let's team up with rival gang mothers and work together to really stop the killing of our children. Let's become organized. So let's stop just screaming. Let's really create something that's tangible in our communities. And I think that is the voice of anyone in any underserved community that thinks that one person can't make a difference. It can. Say as an example of that.
Edwin, do you want to talk about On a Mission and the wonderful work that you guys are doing?
Sure. I'll say a few words about On a Mission. What On a Mission is, it's an after-school program based in South Los Angeles. We work with kids ages 12 to 17, mostly male youth. Although we do have programs for females, our main focus is male youth ages 12 to 17. We do everything from teaching young people how to build their own resumes, respect and self-esteem. We do gang intervention, gang prevention, goal setting, teaching kids the consequences of drugs, more than just saying, telling kids to say no to drugs. We know that, you know, drugs are all around us. So our approach is more to show kids, let kids know that if they choose to make that decision to use, then, you know, they need to know what comes with it, you know, what it actually does to their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
We cover things like dress for success, teach young people how to, like we said earlier, build their own resumes, tie a tie. A lot of the young men that we deal with don't know how to tie a tie. We feel that's something that every young man should know how to do. Fatherhood, one day these young men are going to become fathers. Teaching them the do's and don'ts of fatherhood, pregnancy prevention, financial literacy. We teach kids public speaking, how to articulate themselves, get in front of a group of people and be able to speak, letting them know that, you know, the way you may speak to your homies or your homegirls in the neighborhood is not the same way you would speak to a potential employer.
Right.
Career options, how to get hired. We do a lot of things on the missions. We have field trips, a whole lot of things, a lot of different things that we do. So that's just some of them.
How does your funding come? Do you receive funding from the state, the county, the city?
Currently, I write the grants for On a Mission personally. We have various fundraisers, a few contracts. We work very closely with the Los Angeles Police Department Southwest Division, Officer Rocha, who's a personal friend of mine, and he's awesome. He runs the Jeopardy program for the LAPD Southwest Division. Work very closely with him. We have a contract with View Park Middle School. We do a lot of different works with various schools, but we have a lot of different ways of obtaining our funding, not only grants and donations, but also, like I said, contracts, fundraisers, all different types of things.
Now, when you say that you have contracts with schools, do you actually go into the school and provide services, or
yeah,
do it just come to you?
Well, both, actually. We actually go to the schools. Our Boys to Men program, what we found is that just throughout the city and throughout the district, a lot of schools are having problems with the males, whether it be behavioral issues, whether it be gangs, whether it be experimenting with drugs. There's a lack, there's another word I'm looking for, but there is a there's definitely a need for services amongst our male youth. And we're finding when they get to that age of 13, 14, and 15, their focus on school becomes, I mean, their grades may go from A's and B's to C's and D's and fails, and then they just get to a point where they're not interested in school. And it's a very critical time for our young men because, you know, that's an age where they start getting interested in girls. They, you know, have a sense that they want to try to fit in. And all different types of things. So a lot of the times we'll go into the schools, we'll provide services to the schools and work with kids directly in the schools as an after-school program within the school.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, Tony, I know that SAIA is a charter school. Do you also partner with local schools as well?
Absolutely. That's key to doing this work is working with the local schools. In whatever district that is, whether it's Compton Unified or LA Unified, to ensure that there's a relationship we're building. This is about reintegrating young people and making sure they have the tools they need to achieve an academic success and be able to, like Daniel, achieve higher education.
Mm-hmm.
And we can only do that by partnering up with schools. So it's, you know, taking in young people, sending young people back that are ready to go to a mainstream school if they so choose. And with the intervention work that we're doing, you know, creating safe passages with these schools, we understand that there is a need inside of the school and outside of the school to be critical with what's happening with the dynamics of gangs.
Can you talk a little bit about the dynamics of gangs? I mean, in case there's listeners who don't know.
Sure. So through our gang intervention program, so there's four different types of programs that we have. One that's a law enforcement base where we're working with the county to do supervised gang intervention for young people, very different model of working with these individuals that are part of a community. And it's doing the home visits, it's working with the families at that point. And then we have the community approach to this. And the community approach being the gang reduction and youth development from the city of Los Angeles, where we're incorporating clinical-based case management and gang intervention to respond to crises that are happening, homicides, shootings, any kind of violent act that is happening with different communities. We are in 5 of the 12 grid zones, Boyle Heights, Florence Graham, Newton, North Hollenbeck and 77-2, very diverse neighborhoods. I mean, you would not do gang intervention in Ramona Gardens with a predominantly Latino community the way you would do it in Florence Graham, where it's much more diverse and there's an African-American different approach to doing gang intervention. And then we do the intervention dealing with the violence that is happening in the hospitals. We know that these young people or innocent victims are coming into the hospital, General Hospital being the number one trauma center where they're coming to, and to have someone at your bedside to confidentially talk about what happened, and then post you being released, really provide you with wraparound services and move the family forward to prevent them from any situations of this, working with LAPD, working with the Sheriff's Department to make sure that we're all comprehensively using strategies that are innovative to address the issue of gangs at the core.
Right. And, you know, and I like the fact that, you know, SAIA is doing wraparound services and working with the family, because that's one of the things that, you know, we discussed at AYC was, you know, we would work with the students, but then they would go home and the relationship between the family and the child wasn't conducive to them continuing to excel, and so really looking at it from a holistic approach to service delivery is great.
Absolutely. I mean, you look at substance abuse, for example. You can treat the person that has the issue, but if the family doesn't understand the language that they're learning in recovery, then there's no true recovery. It's the same thing with the young people that are marginalized that we're working with. It's not just about working with this youth, but it's about rebuilding that family and having them being at the driving wheel to make that happen. All we do is become life coaches and walk with them through this process, let them go. Blossom on your own. This is your community. This is your family. You run it.
Right, right. Are there any warning signs that anyone on the panel can think of to share with listeners? Because, you know, one of the things that I learned while I was at AYC, you know, we work primarily with, you know, the Asian community. And what we found was many of the kids had excellent grades. They were doing well in school. But, you know, when they left school, you know, both parents worked sometimes, so they went home and there was nothing to do, so they found things to do. And many of the parents didn't realize that their son or daughter was heading down, you know, a dangerous path until they were actually standing in court with their child because they sold drugs or they stole a car. Mm-hmm. And, you know, are there any warning signs that you can maybe share with parents?
Sure. I can hint on that a little bit. This is Edwin. I would say just for any parent to just, you know, a lot of parents that we deal with, a lot of the parents are single parents, and they're trying to maybe you may have a single mother that's trying to raise two boys, and it's tough. And there's a lot of different things I would say to a parent, but it's just one is I would just know the main thing I think is know who your son or daughter are hanging around.
Mm-hmm.
Get to know their friends, know where they're going. If they say they're going to the mall, find out if they're actually going to the mall. You know, I would definitely look at another warning sign is the grades. If the grades drop, interest in school drops, the kid just child may not be applying themselves. Look at that. And I always tell parents just to show up, just pop up. If the child says they're at the mall or child says they're at the movies or they're at their friend's house, show up, just pop up and let them know that, hey, even if they're not doing anything wrong, that, hey, you know, I'm on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think those are some important things.
This is Sony. I think one of the things that we found is mothers being involved. And I say mothers because, as we know, there's not a lot of fathers that are involved or have been involved in the life of the young people. But number one, not be afraid of your child. This is your child. And you're helping guide this young person. The second is, you know, be nosy. Find out what's going on with them. As Edwin was saying, figure out who their friends are. Call the mothers. As our mothers did at the beginning of SEIA, is they got to know the mothers, the friends' mothers. They got to talk. You know, when they were at a party messing up, it was that mother calling the other mother saying, your son is about to go down. Come over here right now. It's also, you know, looking at what they're wearing. Looking at what they're tagging in different things, it's really also, you know, talking to them, having open communication about sex and drugs and what's out there, and not being afraid or letting other people educate their own young people, getting involved with parent groups, and really finding a strong support network of parents to help guide and do for that youth.
Absolutely. And one other thing, you have a lot of parents that they try to be their kid's friend.
Yeah.
And instead of being the parent, you know, I hear so many stories of parents are like, oh, well, you know, I let him bring girls over and they can go in the room and close the door, but, you know, I'd rather have them doing it here than out on the street somewhere. You know, I think a parent's job is to be a parent. You know, a child doesn't realize that when they're young, but, you know, they'll realize it when they get older. And, you know, the friend that they grew up with is, you know, has, you know, two kids by two different baby mamas. You know, so I think it's important for parents to realize that their job is to be a parent and not to try to be their child's best friend. Because once kids know... Kids look for ways in order to they like to see what they can get away with. You know, they'll push the button. You know, they'll what do you say? They'll press the envelope or push the envelope just to see what they can get away with. And, you know, kids are looking for structure. You know, if there's no structure at home, if a parent is not teaching their child right and wrong, you know, someone else will. And, you know, we just don't want it to be the penal system, you know. But kids are looking for structure, and I think parents' jobs are to be parents and not to try to be friends.
Right. Daniel, you're actually a mentor with Say It Now, correct?
Yeah.
Could you maybe share to listeners who might be, you know, between 13 and 17, you know, some advice that you might give them?
Well, my advice to the teens is to just stay committed. You know, there's a lot of things out there that will, like, guide you to do the wrong thing. For example, like, this gang that I joined, like, I didn't have anyone, as a family member. Well, my sister was there, but it was impossible for her to love me like my mother did, you know. So, like, just stay committed, stay in school, and do what you have to do, because in the future it will pay off. It would really pay off by just staying in school and doing what you have to do.
And now that you're graduating and you're on your way to college, where do you see yourself in 2 to 5 years? What would you like to be doing?
I'm actually working on creating two nonprofit organizations. One nonprofit will be helping at-risk youth, and that organization will be collaborated with Soledad Enriching Action. And my other nonprofit that I'm going to create is going to help kids, like, find out about college and, like, what the importance of it is, you know, and of taking tests, like, for example, the CASE and the SAT and stuff like that. So that's what I see myself doing, deeply involved with that, and still working with, say, as a mentoring coordinator.
Wow, that's awesome. Edwin, I always wonder, like, you know, how people got to where they are, that journey that they took. How did you get to On a Mission? Like, why did it become your mission?
On a Mission, well, like I said, after college, I worked for a lot of different nonprofit organizations. I worked on Skid Row. With parolees. I've worked as a teen suicide prevention counselor. I've worked with mental health patients. I've worked with autistic kids. I've worked with the Boys and Girls Clubs. Doing all of those different things, working with all those different groups, I found the need to work with a younger population. You know, when you have men and women who are, 40, 50, almost 60 years old, and, you know, they're on parole. They've gotten out of prison. They've gone through a transitional program. I think something like 80% end up relapsing and going back to prison. The recidivism rate's around 80%, 70%, somewhere like that. So I would always, you know, working down on Skid Row, you know, I became so good at drug testing, and I knew who I was going to test high, and I knew what I was going to test them for. That's just how much that's how good you get at that type of stuff. I mean, and for me, it was like, you know, I keep doing the same thing. I didn't feel like I was making a difference. Like I said, these men and women are 40, 50, 60 years old. They're still using drugs. They go back to prison. They get out and do the same thing again. So I felt I needed to work with a younger group. Let me catch them when they're 13, 14, 15 years old and they're just experimenting, you know. I felt that I could make a greater impact on that population. So, you know, in 2003, I started On a Mission because I had a lot of case management experience. I had a lot of nonprofit experience, and I felt that, you know, I feel that I know what the problems are. I at least know what some of the problems are, and I felt that I could give back. And, you know, what better way to give back than to start my own organization where I'm able to make the determinations of you know, what will be done. So that's kind of how I started On a Mission.
Okay.
In the early stages. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say in the early stages, it was very hard getting grants. I didn't have the funding to pay someone to write a grant. I think the first time I wanted to apply for a grant, the person was going to charge me like $1,200, and they couldn't even guarantee whether I was going to get the grant or not. So that really taught me to teach myself how to write grants. Yeah, I've received a lot of grants since then, and the program's grown since then. It was very hard at first. Now it's a little bit easier to do things, to get things done and to raise funds for different things. So we're blessed for that. But it was a long, hard process, but, you know, it was definitely worth it. I mean, I enjoy working with these young people. I, you know, whenever you can do something, and kids have never been out of L.A., a lot of kids have never been on an airplane, never been to the beach, believe it or not, although we're only 10, 12 minutes from the beach. To me, that's just unacceptable. You know, it's just something needs to be done, you know. So that was my reason for starting on a mission, you know, I enjoy what I do, and yeah, I hope that we could just continue to grow and provide more services.
That's amazing. And when we spoke maybe a couple weeks ago, you were telling me about a field trip that you're taking with some of your students in June,
mm-hmm.
is it?
Yeah. We actually have two field trips in June. June 1st, we're going deep sea fishing, where we partner with an organization called Friends of Rolo, where we board a boat and go deep sea fishing. We do that with LAPD, and we take kids deep sea fishing, and they're on a boat, and a lot of the kids have never been fishing, never been on a boat, and that's a great trip. That comes up June 1st, and
okay.
June 16th, we are flying to San Quentin Prison. We've been invited to San Quentin. To go inside the prison. We're taking 30 young men with LAPD once again, and we're going to spend the whole day inside San Quentin Prison. The kids are going to do everything from get booked in, checked in. They're going to even eat the prison food for the day. They're going to go in the cells, go into the living quarters, talk to inmates that are facing life. And the reason why we do that trip is because, you know, kids have such a false perception of what prison life is all about, from the music videos to their homeboys or their homegirls that tell them, you know, hey, you know, I'm going to go to prison and get some street credibility and this and that. It's nothing like that. And, you know, these kids need to see that prison is not like what Hollywood makes it out to be. It's not like you hear on TV or like you watch the videos, and it's nothing like that. There's no place to ever want to be. So, you know, the goal of that trip is that hopefully this is their first and last time that they will ever see the inside of a prison.
Right.
So that will be on June 16th, and we're looking forward to that as well.
Wow. Tony, what about Saya? Do you have any events? I know you just had your gala, but do you have any other events coming up?
You know, the services are continuous. The one thing I can talk to you about is, in the summer, we have a group of young people that are going out to the Congo with our youth peace movement, and really preparing to look at how do we prepare for our next conference, where we're bringing young people together with another peace laureate that's going to come out here, but also to look at how we really concretize what this youth peace movement really is about, and how do we synchronize what we're doing internationally to really bring about peace and alternatives to that. We have our reentry programs that are running, we're preparing for Summer Night Lights, which is another program that we do with the city, that we help open up parks up till midnight and provide services there.
Wow. And if this is for Edwin and Tony. Now, if any of our listeners want to get involved or support in any of the events that you're doing, how would they do that?
This is Tony. Feel free to go www.seacharter.net or call 213-480-4200. You can specify what you want to donate or volunteer time to. We're always open to bring new folks into this mix, and especially those people who come from these areas that we work. that are looking to give back to their own communities. And those who are outside wanting to come in and be a part of the Dannies that we're helping produce through SEIA.
Edwin?
Yes, for On a Mission, you can find us on the web at www.joinoam.org. You could call us here at the office at 323-298-4779. We're also on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Our Facebook address is facebook.com/joinoam. We are Monday through Friday. We have a lot of different activities coming up. There's a lot of different programs coming up. We have an 8-week Boys to Men program that just ended for male youth. Like I said, ages 12 to 17. So you can call us. Once again, the phone number is 323-298-4779. Our website, www.joinoam.org.
Great, thank you. You know, and I have a question about girls and teenage girls and gangs. You know, it seems like when we talk about the gang issue, we tend to focus on, you know, the boys. What are some of the numbers for girls?
You can get that, Tony, or
you can go ahead if you want to start.
Oh, you. Your question is what are? I don't have statistical numbers. They aren't as high as the males, but. The need is just as great for the girls. You know, females face different issues from the males. They experience the peer pressures just like the males do. You know, there are so many different peer pressures that the young ladies go through, from, you know, wanting to fit in, how do they look, their weight. I mean, there's a lot of different things. So the need for girl programs are just as great. One of the things that we do it on a mission, we separate the males from the females because of the distraction. You know, at that age, a lot of kids get distracted. It's easier to talk to get through to a room full of males than it would be if you sprinkle two or three or four females in the room. You know, they're totally different. So. We prefer to separate the groups when we do our programs here at On a Mission. But yes, the need is just as great for the females as well.
This is Tony, and I want to talk to you. We do have a gender-specific program to work with young ladies that are in middle school and high school. And it's really about that self-redefining your role as a young woman coming into this. But as this is specific related to gangs, I think the need is a very different need. And the culture of young ladies and gangs has changed. Their roles even in the gangs have changed, both locally and internationally. They are no longer just the drivers of the getaway cars. They're no longer just the transporters, but they're the shooters. They're part of the integral gang life now. And part of that is it is all the oppressive thoughts. The fact that you're born a woman in a male-dominated society, you carry all those burdens with you. And so the programming that we really focus on is how do we self-empower you to look at yourself and accept yourself and not try to be like a man, but be a woman and be proud to be a woman. And so when we specifically talk about gangs and we look at how many of the young ladies are being brought into the system, those numbers continuously grow. We know that doing work inside of the prisons is completely different for men than it is for women. The needs are different. There is a specificity of working with young ladies. And I think to really be effective in that, it needs to be young ladies, I mean, that are running these programs, that have walked these shoes, that can really relate and bring justice to what it is, that have completely reformed their lives. And that's one of the success that we've seen. We know our coordinator, Lakia Johnson, has really, she comes from the neighborhood, she comes from the community, and is now that mentor for these young ladies that are coming on a constant basis, that have started coming in looking like how they felt, and now have become these beautiful young women that have power, phenomenal women.
And I would think that the relatability is one of the key factors in being able to work with the youth, you know, because it would seem difficult to have someone come in who they know didn't come from the neighborhood and they know haven't walked in their shoes. Is that a true statement, Tony?
Absolutely. But I think with that, and most importantly with that, is the consistency and people walking their talk. Because, you know, if you're telling me that I can't drink, I can't smoke, and I can't bang, and on the weekend I see you do any of those three, you're
right.
A hypocrite. You're
right.
No better than the pusher who I looked up to when I was a kid.
Right.
Right. True. Very true. Mm-hmm. Well, we are close to running out of time. Any last advice or comments that you would like to give our listeners? Daniel, I'll start with you.
Well, first of all, to the teens out there that are listening, just to stay committed, stay in school, and then to the parents, to be involved with your kids, and to the fathers, too, to be very involved if you're in their lives, and if you're not, to continue to be in their lives. That's pretty much it. Thank you.
Tony?
You know, the one thing that came to mind for me was we need to be real about the work, and it comes from the heart. I think in SEA, a lot of us come from these marginalized neighborhoods and have now made that choice to change our lives. Given that we're around the corner from 20 years of an uprising that happened in L.A. when I was 16, to now having my own kids and seeing this happen, I think the best advice I can give to any parent is kiss and hug your kids before you leave the house and when you get back, because you don't know if you make it back. You don't know if that's the last time you see your kids. And that hug and that kiss, they remember for the rest of their lives, which is what's missing with the young people that we're working with. Parents, don't be afraid to step out and do what your heart is telling you to do. And let your mind go and follow that heart and that gut. That's what our kids need to be able to make it.
Wow, great. Thank you. Edwin.
I would just say to any parent listening to definitely keep their kids involved in some type of activities. What we find is that when kids are at home, when they have idle time, that's when they tend to get in trouble. Most of the time when kids get in trouble is during the after-school hours. So definitely keep the kids involved in something. Keep them involved in some type of activity. Keep them involved in some type of sports. Any type of program that keeps them from having idle time, time to just sit around, time to get in trouble, because that's when kids tend to get in trouble. So that's pretty much it. Keep the kids involved. Keep your kids involved. Know their friends, know who they're hanging around, know where they're going, and then check up on it. You know, don't just take their word for it, you know.
This is Tony again. If I could just share one last thing. For everyone who's listening, do not give up on these kids. Some of these kids want you to give up on them because that's what they know.
Absolutely.
So one of the things we do here is keep trying. So you fail, we pick you back up. And when you feel like you've given up, you tried everything, then call us, 213-480-4200, or go on the web, seacharter.net. We're here. We won't give up.
Thank you. That's important. You know, and I, you know, we created Halt for the Community for this purpose exactly, where we wanted to talk about issues that were important to, you know, our communities and to the well-being of our kids. And so I want to offer this to anyone, you know, who's on the call or who's listening, you know, please use Heart for the Community as a platform to get your message out. You know, I would love to have Daniel, Edwin, and Tony for you to come back and, you know, maybe we talk about something slightly different than what we talked about today, or you give us an update on what's going on. Like, I would love to hear updates from you, Daniel. I think you're an amazing young man, and I look forward to, you know, seeing your nonprofit start and seeing the wonderful work that you're going to do in the future. But, you know, to please use Heart for the Community as a platform. You know, running nonprofits myself, we always seem to struggle with finding an outlet to get our message out that wasn't at Sunday morning at 2 a.m., you know. And so the platform really is for the community and about the community. So that is my open invitation to the three of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, that pretty much wraps up our show. Again, I want to thank Daniel, Tony, and Edwin for being guests today. So Rebecca Lawler, who is our wonderful Soul Sister Radio sponsor, for MadMac Multimedia, who is Heart for the Community sponsor, and the amazing Heart for team and producer Maria for all your support. And I will see you next week. We're probably going to be talking about teenage homelessness and what happens to kids when they age out of foster care. So that's next week on Heart for the Community. And remember, together we can change the world one heart at a time. See you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Thank you.
Yes. underneath the trees.